We're back on the Fan pregame. Jesse and Ailish, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 2 hours left in our show, and it is officially, that's your buzzer, the trade deadline.
Pencils down.
Pencils down. And let me tell you, while we were in commercial break, we manifested maybe the biggest deal of the entire day. This NHL trade deadline update is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to uncommon performance in a Subaru with legendary symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Speaking of legendary, the Vegas Golden Knights and LTIR strike again. Tomáš Hertl will be headed to the Vegas Golden Knights after already acquiring Noah Hanifin and Anthony Mantha this week. They do it again, folks. They are swinging for the fences and no shame about it. Boys, we're bringing in Sammy McKee.
Hey, here we are now.
Great haircut. He's got a new haircut today.
Yeah.
He's not wearing his Vegas Golden Knights hat where you might want to put it on at this point.
Yeah. I mean,
this team's a joke, man.
I feel for my Edmonton Oiler fan brethren in my life.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you get Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick for a first round pick, and then they get Hanifin, Mantha, and now Tomáš Hertl. You know,
it's crazy.
The big sexy teams get big sexy players here, and it's just, that's what Vegas is. They don't screw around. They know what they are, and they do it. Like, I can't imagine how sick it must be to be a fan of that team. It's an enjoyable thing.
Yeah, they just load up good players. Like, Hanifin was probably the crown jewel on the defensive side that was available, and they got him. And then you go and get Tomáš Hertl, who's a 2-time 30-goal scorer. It's like, we were talking about this during the break. Like, you just wish other teams or the team that you root for would do the LTIR thing like the Vegas Golden Knights. And
yeah, how's Johnny T's back feeling?
I don't know if it's
got a sore.
I don't know if it's nefarious.
It better have been sore last week. It's too late now.
Right. I don't know if it's like how nefarious it actually is, but nonetheless, like, there's no question that this has been wildly beneficial to the Vegas Golden Knights. And here, yet again, like, this team has never been bad.
This is insane. This is not one. Not two.
It's like five.
Not three. It's 3 years now for them doing this. So, I don't know. Like,
so what if this was the Leafs?
Yeah, well, I said this yesterday on Real Kipper and Bourne. No, and they would be sending Gary's goons to the Ford Performance Center with a SWAT team. They'd be kicking down the door.
100%.
Show me the leg, John!
Yep,
they would be. Show me the leg! I don't know. I think that if you have the medical stuff to prove it, like, I think Mark Stone has a lacerated spleen, is what I heard. I mean, that sounds bad, but I mean, is it going to be unlacerated by game one of the playoffs? Probably.
Is anything can happen in Vegas? They can probably use one of those guys that, like, you know, make people disappear. Just make your spleen disappear. Yeah. Like, just put it in one of those see-through boxes and it's gone. Yeah. We'll get more Vegas talk. We're gonna have another 2 hours to break it down, and then of course, Real Kipper and Bourne at 5 till 7
so
tonight. But we want to talk Leafs with you because the official trade deadline has ended. Probably nothing else trickling through, and the Leafs made two moves over the last little bit, Edmondson and Lyubushkin, to beef up their blue line. What would you give the Maple Leafs as a grade for this trade deadline?
Probably just, you know, like a fine grade, I guess, like a B.
Is that fine for Sam McKee?
Yeah, like, I mean,
you're happy
for
with
me?
A B?
For me, that's
excellent
straight
for you,
A's.
Isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. Like,
B,
my parents
okay.
were thrilled with like a C plus, but I'm doing this for a reason.
But they have cap space, and they didn't do too much.
I don't think. Like, I think maybe watching the last two Bruins games, unfortunately, and now having the Bruins win 7 straight games against the Leafs and just look like they love beating the crap out of the Leafs and they completely own the Leafs and they're probably going to play the Leafs in the first round. Like, is trading your first round pick for Nick Dowd going to change your fortune? Like, I like them adding a couple meaner guys. Like, Edmondson, you know, you can't teach 6'5", 220. He's a big old man, big mean man. That's fine. I like Lyubushkin. He's, you know, another big mean man.
He's looked really great.
Yeah, he's actually been solid in his games. But to me, there's nothing out there that was going to really move the needle.
Agreed.
And, you know, I liked Adam Henrique, but I don't really like him as a first-round pick kind of guy. I mean, I'm waiting for a tweet here looking to see if they say that the Toronto Maple Leafs are done. I haven't seen that tweet yet, but that one usually comes out. I was broken by the last couple Leafs Bruins games. Like, I just really thought.
Yeah.
I'm more on your side than I am than Jesse is, but Jesse thinks that it's fine.
You think it's fine?
Well, I mean, in a perfect world, you don't want to lose seven straight to the Boston Bruins. But I do think you saw last night, and it was a back-to-back last night, so I don't want to throw out the game entirely, but I do think you needed to see something from a physicality perspective and starting stuff and getting in the scrums and picking people out of the scrums and fighting, frankly. And Bertuzzi had a great fight last night. And I do think there's a little bit of a different approach with this team when it comes to that level of thing. Like, yeah, the result is one thing, and obviously it matters, and we talked about that. They're probably not going to catch the Bruins at this point.
Yeah.
But I think in a seven-game series, what we saw last night matters a little bit more than what we've seen from the Leafs in years past. Like, I equate this team now more to the post-deadline team from a year ago than I do the pre-deadline team from a year ago. Like, I don't think they're quote-unquote soft.
No,
I think
not.
They have their issues against the Bruins and probably the Panthers, because the Panthers are probably just better.
Yeah.
But I liked what I saw in terms of the physicality last night, and you're not going to win every game. Like, that's the thing that I think we get. We follow every single game. It's 82. And again, seven in a row to the Bruins is not good. But if you take the Bruins as a whole, we just went, Ilitch and I went through their lines during a break.
Yeah.
There are like six guys in the Bruins that you've basically never heard of. And like, they're just, they're not that scary anymore.
The thing is,
they're not that good.
They still wear those stupid tarps, buddy. And it just doesn't seem to matter
when they score.
I got the game plan against the Leafs.
I get it. But you get my point. Like, there was a little bit more last night in the sense that they pushed back a little.
I give so much credit to Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi and Reeves and these guys who are here. But it's just, it feels like we're just having the same conversation we've had for, you know, different eras of this Leafs team where they keep trying to tack on these guys. And it's, you know, they all end up leaving. It's like you bring in Foligno, and he's like, I'm going to sign with the team that cares more.
I said the same thing, Sammy.
It's like Ryan O'Reilly's like, yeah, I kind of want to leave there. It's all the guys that they trade for. Luke Shen's like, I'm out of here. All the guys, they kind of tough guys they trade for at the deadline, all kind of leave. Because you see a perfect example last night. There's a huge scrum. Max Domi's trying to fight Marchand, and you just see Tavares just kind of
sitting
there.
I was listening to you guys talk.
That was
bad.
You can't paint, is it paint stripes on a cat and call him a tiger? Is that what it is? Or is it a pussy cat?
I don't know what the hell.
Some saying that means you can't turn guys tough that aren't tough.
Yes.
And I do think that's the curse of this core of the Leafs fans. And Leafs fans are always cursed, so this is their curse, is that you have these unbelievable, breathtaking, amazing players that you never could have dreamed of having, but none of them have ever looked at anyone mean. Mm-hmm. And they don't, like, seem to want to do it at all. Like, they kind of own those guys. They love playing. The Bruins love playing against the Leafs' top guys. They want to beat them. They love beating them. Mm-hmm. They take pride in beating them. And it just shows to me.
We're going to get Luke Fox in a minute or two here. Yeah. You can stay or you can go.
I'll stay.
You want to talk to Luke?
Yeah, I'll talk to Luke.
It's lovely to have you in here. And it's also, you can't paint stripes on a horse to make it a zebra, but you were really close on
that one. There's not something about painting stripes on a pussycat and calling it a tiger?
No, nothing to do with that. No.
There is that saying.
No, don't even bother wasting your time to look it up.
I'm looking it up.
Focus on this question. I'm interviewing
that's
you.
That's too good.
Was there something that happened in the last day or two that you wish the Leafs had done? Was there a trade that went by and you said, I would have wanted that?
Should have been more confident with it, buddy.
No, not really. So
that's a good perspective because, maybe if you use your LTIR to get, hurdle, but yes.
I mean, the Buchnevich, if he went somewhere, maybe him. You know, the Parayko talk to me was interesting.
But they didn't even move.
But, I mean, the one that kind of kills me that happened within the last 10 minutes is Matt Dumba goes to the Tampa Bay Lightning for a fifth-round pick. Mm-hmm. It's like the Leafs, they gave up a third and a third and a five for
Edmonton. They even have any fifth-round picks left?
Yeah, probably not. They don't have any picks.
Left.
I really kind of came to this realization when Kipper and Bourne were like, do some fake trades for us. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And it legitimately took me 3.5 hours to come up with four.
I saw your bear cupboard meme.
There's just nothing to deal with. He's got nowhere to go, really. Like, I mean, Robertson, other teams have pro scouts, guys. Like, they know what he's about. It's just like Topi Niemelä. You know, are they going to trade Minton? Sure. But does he have a ton of value? Easton Cowan's your only one that really has a ton of value. He's probably the best prospect outside of, you know, the major leagues. But I don't know. I think that what they did is fine. People will probably be pissed that they didn't do more. Maybe get another forward. Have we seen the Leafs are done yet?
We haven't seen
anything about the full return yet for Hurdle or if the Leafs are done yet. I did see that the Habs are done, and there was Dave Savard, and there's a couple other people on the Habs that would have been traded, but nothing yet.
Are you so? I'm sensing more apathy from you than I've heard in a long time. Are you more of So if this is the
I'm
core,
just reserved to a fate.
If this, right, Jesse. Right. So if the core, in fact, is the problem, and you keep swapping guys in and out, and you're trying to find some recipe that works, like are you just now in the prove it stage where unless they beat a Boston or a Florida,
for sure,
then nothing else matters?
Yes.
Like you need to see the result.
You describe me exactly. Right. And do I think that the Leafs could beat the Bruins in a series?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. You got Luke?
We do have Luke. Bring Luke in. Fox of Sportsnet. Luke, are the Leafs done? We need to know that first.
I can't say for sure.
Get in there. Bust open some doors.
But, man, it's been quiet. Well, I'm not even there. I'm in Montreal.
Oh.
And then... And they have the day off. I'm here because they play the Canadiens tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the Leafs players have a full day off here. It's a nice sunny day. I'm sure they're enjoying it.
Yeah, they earned it.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah. And Brad Treliving's holed up at Scotiabank. And they're not letting the reporters in there because there's a concert or something they're preparing for. So I'm curious how he explains his non-action. Although, you know, I have a hunch he's just going to say the prices were too high and we have no assets.
Luke, I'm sitting with two downers here.
Two people who
looked at the two Bruins losses this week.
I'm a professional broadcaster. I don't pick sides.
And thought, hey, this is the same old story with this team. They can't win when it matters. The seven straight losses against the Boston Bruins.
A pretty good picture.
And I took the other side of it in the sense that I appreciated some of what I saw last night from the Leafs in terms of physicality and pushback, which I think is something that this market has been clamoring for a really long time. Where do you sit in terms of how you feel about the Leafs and their inability to beat teams like the Bruins when it matters in two games this week where they really could have closed the gap?
Yeah, I'd be disappointed if I was a Leafs fan watching those two games. You know, you get outscored 8-2 by a team that you should absolutely get up for. Yes, I like that Bertuzzi and Domi are showing some heart and they seem to be in the mix. But what's concerning to me is that Boston did an excellent job shutting down Toronto's best players. And, you know, we talk a lot, especially on a day like this, we're talking about, what can they add? And we talk about the fringe players or the role players that are brought in for 1 year to kind of fasten some grit or toughness or whatever you want to call it on the fringes. But what Boston did over these two games was quiet Austin Matthews. Mitch Marner gets a power play goal, but the Leafs didn't score once 5-on-5. So my concerns would be, can the Leafs win a special teams battle if they play seven games against the Bruins? I have my doubts. I would give that edge to Boston. Toronto's penalty kill hasn't been great. I know they're trying to address that with Edmondson and Lyubushkin. And the other thing is just Boston's ability to really dial it in and say, these are the other team's best players. If we get them kind of quiet, we can win. And I think Boston is better coached than Toronto. I think that plays a factor. And I think the other thing is Toronto's always kind of hoping a goalie gets hot, whereas Boston actually has two legitimate goalies that I would put up against Toronto's goaltenders.
Just a quick note on the goaltender thing. Frank Saravelli reporting that sounded like the Bruins had a deal on the table to move Ullmark to the Kings that did not end up crossing the finish line. So just an interesting thing that did not happen. We'll have Frank out at 4:30 to ask him about that. Yeah.
So, Luke, you just laid out all that stuff there. But it's like, what is the hope for Leaf fans in a playoff series? Like, what gives you any bit of hope is what I'm asking you. As a Leaf fan myself, like I really am looking at these two teams and I'm wondering where the edge lies for the Leafs in any manner.
Well, it's the offense, it's the power play, it's the forwards, it's the high end talent. I mean, that's the bet all along, right? It's that these guys, and all of them are having good seasons, all of them are healthy, so that's the bet. It's the bet that you can outscore them. It's the bet that Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander all rise to the occasion, and that they're not in their heads about walking into TD Garden and thinking about years past. It's that they deliver, that the power play doesn't dip at the worst time of year, that it actually thrives. I mean, it's the way it's constructed. Yeah, you want to play tighten up on defensively, limit the chances and rebound opportunities by having some toughness and shot blockers on the back end. But if this team is going to go three rounds, four rounds, I mean, that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. It's going to be those guys, and they need to not when the series is over, you need to look back and say, man, was Auston Matthews awesome. That was a signature series for Auston Matthews. That's the kind of moment you need to have.
We're talking to Lou Fox. Leafs haven't done anything today. Haven't got the official word that they are finished, but nothing, and it's 3:17. So just things to consider. So they did get Edmondson and Lyubushkin and Cade Weber, who is a university defenseman as well, big boy. But when you do expect to hear from Brad Treliving, like, what do you think the biggest piece of information he could share? Were they maybe not comfortable paying the prices? Do you think maybe just the right fit wasn't out there? Do you think he had just nothing in the cupboards and that's not his fault necessarily? Like, what do you anticipate his messaging to the media and the fans to be when he eventually does speak?
My guess would be that, you know, he values his assets, which are very limited, which are the first round pick, which he is willing to move. And I think he will be willing to move it at the draft even. And then Fraser Minn and Easton Cowan, who's lighting up the OHL for Sammy's favorite junior team. So, so I'm in Montreal. For sure, he checked in on David Savard. Mm-hmm. But if you're Kent Hughes, this is not your deadline. Like, you have Savard under contract for another year. So you set a high price. And if Treliving isn't willing to match that price for, you know, a dependable, penalty-killing right shot, good character, all those things, then you just say, okay, talk to me again next year, because he's under contract for next year. And how many guys with actual term do we see get moved? I mean, I guess we just saw Thomas Hurdle get moved. That's a blockbuster, but they're few and far between. A lot of it is just pure rentals. And, you know, Treliving didn't see many pure rentals that were worth a first in his mind.
Mm. Okay, guys, I have a trade to announce. Luke Fox, I'm going to make this announcement to you. The NHL trade deadline update is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to Uncommon Performance in a Subaru with legendary symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. According to Jeff Merrick, Connor Dewar to Toronto from the...
I tells everything you need to know.
Guys, I tried. I even asked for advice before I said it out loud. From the Minnesota Wild. Dewar. Let's say Dewar in advance of the trade deadline, just getting sneaking in there. So what do we know about Mr. Connor? Let's look him up.
Good. Luke, your thoughts?
Tell me about Connor, Luke.
I got it. 14 points this season with the Minnesota Wild. 10 goals.
He's a center.
A left-handed shooting center.
He's from Manitoba.
24 years of age, so getting a little younger.
5'10", 183.
Ooh.
Maybe Dubas took back 92nd over for
the overall in 2018.
So, Luke, your hard-hitting analysis on the newest Maple Leaf.
I think it's indicative of the price point that he's been shopping in, right? He's looking for value at the fringes, and I think if part of it's because of the assets, like we talked about, like most trade rental deals go for a second, and they don't have a second this year, next year, or the next year. So then you're really scraping the barrel and finding out what you can get for mid to low round picks, or you're going for something big, and he wants to save his big assets. So it's more of the same. It's cheap depth. But I don't mind it. You know, the fact that you have another NHLer. I don't know if you guys were probably watching the game last night, and Matthew Nyes goes down, and then your mind goes, okay, so who's the next man up? You know, Nick Robertson, he's had a decent season, but, you know, then you get into like Alex Steeves, and, you know, I think you need bodies if you plan to go deep. So I don't mind the fact that he's adding a little bit of depth from Minnesota here, but
yeah,
it's not, he's not going to be an impact player. And also their center depth in particular, I think it doesn't help to have another centerman.
Yeah, I think it's possible he gets some time on the PK if he, in fact, sticks with the lineup. He's killed some penalties in the past, and the Leafs penalty kill hasn't been the greatest this season either, so there's opportunity there. I wanted to ask you one question. You mentioned the Leafs goaltending when we were talking about the Bruins conversation, and the Bruins goaltending is just a little more of a sure thing. Did Joseph Woll's performance last night kind of concern you? And maybe if you combine those two games against the Bruins, like is there something that you saw that would shake your confidence in the young man a little bit? I know that one from the point was, you know, every goalie wants some goals back, but that one was particularly backbreaking at that point of the game. Do you have any concerns about where the Leafs goaltending is at this stage?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, I'm concerned that it's not elite, but that concern's been there since the beginning.
Right.
I'm not pinning this on Joseph Woll. He's played two NHL games since the first week of December. He's working his way back from an injury. And then both the games are against, you know, a team that is really up for those games and a really strong, good team. So, I think we need to just let the kid find his groove back, get him some starts. I'm actually probably the most encouraged I have been by the Leafs goaltending situation in the last little bit, because it felt like they only had one guy going, and it was just well-timed. You know, like Martin Jones steps up when they need him the most. And then when Jones is starting to flail a little bit and seems to be overworked or losing some of his mojo, Samsonov comes back from the dead. And it's all been very well timed, but it seems like there's only been one guy going at a time. And now they finally got two. Samsonov's playing superb. I thought he had a great game against the Sabres. So, I'm not gonna rag on Joseph Woll for last night's performance. I think just get this guy some more starts, get his confidence up, and I think a little bit of healthy competition back there isn't the worst thing.
Game one of the playoffs, who's your starter as of this moment, Samsonov or Joseph Woll?
Well, it's Samsonov right now. He's the hotter guy.
It's crazy, that's amazing. You know,
had you asked me a couple days ago, I might have went with Woll.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think you just let these guys battle it out, push each other, and whoever you feel is playing the hottest right then, you use. And, you know, outside of Tampa, which, you know, they never pull Vasilevsky, most teams that go on deep runs need both guys. So I don't think it's a bad thing if you don't absolutely know, have a true number one in your head, you know, 6 weeks before the playoffs start. I think you let it play out, and who's playing the best, who you think is going to win you game one, that's who you start.
All right, Luke, we'll let you go. Looks like the Leafs are going to have a press conference at 3:30, so I'm sure you'll be busy. And bon voyage, and get some poutine, et cetera. And it's Connor Dewar.
Connor Dewar.
Connor Dewar.
Go say hello to the newest Maple Leaf. Thanks so much, Luke.
Thanks, Luke.
Okay, take care, guys. Okay, bye.
Luke Fox of Sportsnet. Shout out Daniele Franceschi, who sent me the phonetics. We were right. Dewar.
Connor Dewar. Yeah.
Maple Leafs getting a centerman.
I was frantically looking for his shorthanded ice time on a.
I think he's a PK guy.
I can't figure it out.
My quick Twitter searches with people said he's a good PK.
Okay, good. I need my good friend Justin Bourne to figure out all the fancy websites for me, but I couldn't do it.
Bourne has the most in-depth tweets. Like, he's so thorough.
But he does kill penalties. He's a center. I mean, he's scored 10 times so far this year. I
can't have too many of those.
All right.
It's kind of the same situation as the D. It's like you never have too many defensemen or too many bottom six centermen.
Ultimately, what this comes down to, and what it comes down to every single season with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the playoffs, as if you're a good player, shoot it in the net a lot. And they need those four guys to shoot in the net a lot.
Like Marner can't be passing up options to shoot it in a wide open cage like he did last night, is what you're saying?
My only explanation for that is hockey's so hard.
It happened faster than we think.
No, but like...
Yeah.
It's hard. I don't know.
All right, gentlemen. Sam, we appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure.
Fresh cut, fresh fit.
Yeah.
Freshest player for the Maple Leafs, Connor Dewar, being acquired here at the buzzer for the Maple Leafs. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to check in possibly with the Maple Leafs having a press conference. Haley Salvian still to join us. We're going to talk a little PWHL. We got some jerseys to show you as well. Luke Gazdick will come in studio Frank Saravelli will wrap up our day. He's already tweeting about things that didn't happen, and they're already, ooh, I wonder if. So we'll take a quick break. The Fan pregame will continue on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, halfway through our three-hour show. It's Ailish and Jesse Rubinoff filling in today.
Hello.
The trade deadline officially concluded. People trickling in some final information. The latest and most relevant to the Toronto market is Connor Dewar to the Maple Leafs from the Minnesota Wild, and it is confirmed to be a 2026 fourth-round pick. So they did have one of those. They didn't have much, the Leafs, but they had a 2026 fourth rounder that is going out the door for Connor.
It's a little bit bizarre when you frame it like that. Like, why are they still giving away the few draft picks that they have left? Like, there are literal chunks of drafts upcoming where the...
They don't even need to participate.
Yeah, they can just nap for like three rounds.
Like, if you work in the scouting department, you're like, do I still have a job?
It's crazy. I don't get it.
Oh, boy. All right. So we still have a couple more guests joining us. Luke Gazdik in studio at 4, Frank Saravelli at 4:30. But Haley Salvian joins us now. Haley, congrats on getting through the trade deadline. How's it going?
Good. I feel like this is one of the first years where I haven't really had anything to do on the deadline. I'm like, I was just kind of sitting and watching. And it was really boring until
Well, you should have turned on Sportsnet 360 with Jesse and I and the alt stream. We were breaking news, but we were having fun. All right, so I was different perspective, though.
I went to HomeSense, so I missed the, first hour.
If I go to HomeSense, it's game over. Like, I'm coming home with new duvet, pillows, plates, a butter dish that I don't even need, he probably
it's one of the best. What's one of the best places on earth to just walk around?
It's been a better deadline day than I expected, given how many things happened in the days leading up to the deadline. So it's been good. You guys been busy?
Well, I'm just surprised. I'm surprised to hear that Connor Dewar doesn't move the needle for you at all. Like a fourth liner, penalty killer for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like that seems like when you looked at the names that were available come trade deadline day, I think this was sort of the expectation that it wasn't, maybe we all wanted it to be a little bit busier than this, but the names aren't that big. You look at the Toffolis and the Thomas Hurdles, that's probably the two biggest names of the day.
Yeah.
But coming in, like, the expectation, I think, was generally speaking, probably pretty low for the league as a whole.
Yeah, I think because, Jake Guentzel goes early, the top defenders go early, Markstrom stays put. It sounds like now's the time where we're going to hear all the things that, maybe could have happened but didn't, like Linus Allmark, didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of things like that where it's like, oh, what could have been? I think heading into today, I think Toffoli, in terms of trying to acquire somebody who could play at the top of the lineup and provide some scoring in a meaningful way was probably going to be the best bet. And I like that deal for Winnipeg, just adding another score. And I don't even think Tomas Hertl was on the radar for people.
No,
correct me if I'm wrong, but that was one where I was like, wait, what? What do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the bell of the ball of the day for sure. And I think in terms of the rest, we were having this conversation on the Athletic Hockey Show because we ended up, our teeing up the deadline day show just turned into a recap. And, it was a conversation of, we were kind of curious how teams were going to get squeezed or left holding the bag because everything that was left was kind of just depth wingers, right? Outside of, again, the Toffolis and the Hurdles of the world. It was a lot of could round out your top nine or be good in the bottom six. And it was what are teams really going to give up for rental depth players? So that was kind of the name of the game heading into the day for sure. So I'm not surprised that, that's where the Leafs kind of got into action.
Yeah, the Leafs definitely not in the headline makers of today. But I think Vegas is certainly one from the last week. Saw that they were going to have a over $17 million they can activate off of IR and LTIR once the regular season ends. They obviously, they get a couple big names. You mentioned Tomas Hertl, the latest one there to surprise. I just, not even a question about do you hate that they're doing this? Just a question more about this team seems to be unapologetic in how they approach going after it. They want a Stanley Cup. Yeah, and they should be. It's almost like, why isn't everybody doing that? Or why isn't everybody just playing by whatever rules that they can make? Just the fact that Vegas has done this a couple years in a row, and they're unapologetic about there, and they're a new team, an expansion team, they just won a cup. It feels like they play from their own set of rules, and they don't care what anyone else has to say about it.
Yeah, I think they, and it's not even like playing, I guess in a way you could say they play by their own set of rules if you're thinking of how like ownership in the front office is operating, but like they're playing by like the rule book. Like they're not the whole, like I said this on the podcast, I'm so bored with the circumventing the cap conversation because they're not, like what they're doing is within the rules. Mm-hmm. And if people hate the rule, like complain about Gary Bettman, complain about the NHL, like we want the NBA rule, which is the salary cap counts in the playoffs. Like if you want to complain about the system, complain about that, but not the Vegas Golden Knights use of the system, right? It's like, and be more frustrated that your GM's not saying, like, I don't care about my first round pick. I don't care about my prospect who's maybe going to turn into Tomas Hertl. Like, I'd rather spend it all to go and get Tomas Hertl. Like, I appreciate the way they go about things. I think it's really fun. And, like, this is what GM, like, when you have this quote unquote gift, which is an elite core and a win now window, like, I don't think you should care about the first round picks and the prospects, honestly. And if you want to go out and win, and I think the Golden Knights have shown, you know, quite literally since they've existed that they're doing things in a way that we haven't seen before. And I think it makes it fun. I know they're kind of public enemy number one for a lot of fan bases and maybe even a lot of teams, because it is frustrating. And I get it. I get being, and this is the thing, like, I don't want to make this seem like I'm poo-pooing on fans who get frustrated by this, because I get it. Like, you look at even like the dates in which Mark Stone gets put on LTIR and you're an opposing fan and you're like, what the heck, like, come on. So I get it, I understand the fan reaction, but like the Golden Knights are just using the system the way that they need. And I think the big part too is like, do you honestly think the Vegas Golden Knights don't want Mark Stone in their lineup, like, especially this year? Like, they're in a wild card spot. Like, of course they'd rather have Mark Stone in the lineup than having that LTIR cap room. Like, you got to make the playoffs first for these things to matter. And especially now, I don't think they're going to have a problem making the playoffs. But there's been, I think, a select few general managers that we can point to that have, like, understood the gift and have not cared about the future. And yeah, there's going to be pains from that when that window closes. But I'm thinking like Julien Brisebois. This year's not a great example because they kind of just only went out and got Matt Dumba. But like Brisebois has, like, you know, mortgaged the future and the farm to bring in top players and even like, you know, moved out good roster players for salary cap reasons. I think Jim Rutherford, when he was the GM of the Penguins, showed that too. Like, he understood, I've got Crosby and Malkin and Fleury and Letang, and I'm going to spend to make those guys and this team even better to win. And I just appreciate GMs and teams who go about it that way, because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you made a lot of really excellent points there. I think when you look at fan bases that are upset, it coincides with Canadian fan bases, because the Golden Knights reside in the Pacific Division, the Calgary Flames obviously chasing Vegas, and Vegas is chasing Edmonton and Vancouver. So I think we hear a lot of the conversation about what Vegas is doing in this country, because it actually has a direct impact on the future success potentially of a number of Canadian teams. And I wanted to ask you about those Canadian teams, because earlier in the show, Ailish and I were talking about how it seems like, I mean, every year technically could be, but it seems like there are Canadian teams in league now that have a legitimate chance of making a pretty deep run. And it's been far, far too long since a Canadian team has won a Stanley Cup. But when you evaluate the work that some of the Canadian teams have done this week, not only today, but this week, and where they're positioned now, how do you feel about the Canadian teams as a whole and their chances of going into the springtime?
Mm-hmm. I definitely feel better about Canadian teams in the Western Conference than I would in the East. That's for sure. Like, do I think the Leafs are going to get through the Florida Panthers to win a Stanley Cup? Like, probably not. The Panthers are the top team in the league, and they just got better. So, you know, that's a tough one, and that's not me. I'm not trying to be a hater or anything. Like, maybe something crazy could happen, but I don't know if many people are picking Toronto to make it to, you know, the point where they've got to get through Florida and making it to the Cup final, quite frankly. And I think when I look at the Western Conference, I like the Jets. I've liked them all year. I mean, maybe at the start of the year, I was like, what's happening? I thought they were trading everybody. I'm so confused. But Ailish could probably attest to the fact that I've been a bit of a Jets bandwagoner this season, and they get better with Tyler Toffoli. I mean, he's a naturally gifted goal scorer. He's a Stanley Cup champion, a multi-time Stanley Cup champion, so he knows how to win when it matters, and he knows how to score. Like, this is a 20-goal guarantee guy. I know he's a little bit older at this point, but his production hasn't really dropped in any kind of devastating way. Like, he's going to be a 30-goal guy again this season. He's at 26 goals in 61 games. So I really like the Toffoli addition. I like what the Jets have done. Obviously, they had Sean Monahan earlier in the deadline, too, and they've got a Vezina-caliber goalie. I think when you're looking in the Pacific, the Oilers and the Canucks are two teams that could have a good shot, too. Honestly, though, like, when I'm looking at who are the teams that just beefed up that I'd be afraid of in the playoffs, like, unfortunately, it's not. Like, I'm not thinking top of mind of Canadian teams. I'm looking at Vegas. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Avs. I'm looking at the Stars. Like, the West is going to be so fun. I'm so excited for the Western Conference playoffs. Obviously, the Canes are winners of the deadline, too, so in the Panthers. So, yeah, I think this is a good year to look at Canadian teams. Like, I think there are more Canadian teams that you could reasonably expect to do well in the postseason this year, but I don't know if I'd be putting all my chips in on them winning just because of what some of the other teams have done, too.
We're chatting with Haley Salavian of The Athletic. I want to ask you about the Flames, and before I ask you that, Frank Saravelli tweeting that they still have one trade in the queue.
Ooh.
So okay. Keeping that in mind, they found deals for Tanev and Hanifin, not Markstrom yet. That could be the trade, but I know you've covered the Flames for quite a while, and you know that market. How do you think they did at the trade deadline, knowing that they were going to be getting rid of some pieces, some important pieces, and this answer could change once you find out what this trade in the queue is, but at this current moment?
Yeah, I feel like I look at the Flames and I still think they're a little bit in the mushy middle, right? Like, I think it's so tough because we don't know what some of the other offers were. Like, we don't know what's happening behind closed doors. So I never want to hammer a GM, certainly not Craig Conroy. But I look at the return that he got when you look at that whole body of work and you think of the caliber of players that have been moved out the door. Tyler Toffoli, Elias Lindholm, Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin. And it's not just the quality and the quantity, but it's the fact that, like, these were the top guys at their position and on the trade boards, right? Like, Hanifin and Tanev were number one and two on most people's big boards. And I feel like when you look at all the players they moved out and you look at what they've gotten in, it's two first-round picks, some other draft picks. You get Kuzmenko. Sarangovich has been good for the team. He's also on my fantasy roster, and he's been great. So, like, I can't really hate on that. But, like, they didn't really get any blue-chip prospects, right? Like, and I just think if you're going to be retooling or taking a step back and rebuilding, like, what are you doing that with, realistically? So I don't think it's a catastrophe. I don't think it's a disaster. But I do think the return that the Flames got, when we consider the quality of those pieces, leaves something to be desired, to say the least, for me.
I look at the standings, and I'm just – one of the great things about hockey is that I just have no idea really who's great. Like, the Florida Panthers, 90 points, I think it's pretty safe to say that they're pretty much the real deal. But when you go on down the list, like – anyone could win. Like, you can make a case for literally any of these teams. Like, Vegas Golden Knights are the second seed in the West wild card. I know Vancouver's having a great year, but, you know, they won three in a row, but they're coming off a pretty brutal stretch there too. The Oilers are actually the odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup, because I think McDavid plays into that, and the 16-game winning streak plays into that as well. But they're not even leading their division. In fact, they're 11 points back of the Canucks. Like, it's the whole thing is so bizarre, and I think that underscores, like, why some teams are hesitant to go all in at the trade deadline, and why other teams feel like they have a shot. Like, was there any team that you think you're surprised by them not choosing to do more at the trade deadline, or a team that, you know, what you would have liked to see them go out and acquire to make a push for it? Because it feels like it's pretty wide open when it comes to who can actually, you know, make a deep run into June here.
I'm kind of surprised, and maybe surprise isn't the right word, because I'm certainly not some kind of Canucks insider here, but I do think, and it's probably unfair because the Canucks did make some moves. You know, they sign Elias Pettersson. That's not a deadline move per se, but, you know, they get Lindholm as well. So the Canucks have done some things, but I feel like today I was a little bit surprised that they were quiet considering where they're at in the standings. And, you know, how good that team has been. And, you know, they didn't end up signing Phil Kessel, right?
Right.
That was something we kind of thought was going to happen. So the Canucks were pretty quiet today, which was a little bit surprising, but maybe Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin figured that their work was done. And, you know, if they couldn't get Jake Guentzel, they didn't want to get in on much. And again, as we talked about, it was mostly depth guys at this point. So maybe it's like, we're not going to get in on these prices just to add somebody who's going to maybe elevate our third or fourth line. Like maybe they looked at that and said, it's not something we need for the price. So I think the Canucks not getting in on things was a little bit of a surprise. I think Boston was kind of interesting. I think the trade that they made today for Andrew Peak was like an odd choice. It's not like they gave up a lot. I mean, they gave up a third round pick and a defender just for, you know, a big right shot defender. He's physical. I don't know. The Bruins didn't seem like a team that had a glaring need for a player on the right side D. So to go out and get him was one where I was like, that's weird. Like, why did they do that? So the Bruins were a little bit interesting to me. I think you're right, though, the fact that this things are pretty wide open. Like when I'm looking at the league-wide standings and the top 10, like any team in the top 10 could realistically win the Stanley Cup this year. Like you could convince me that the Oilers or the Canes, Jets, Rangers, like the top 10 in the league standings are just like, okay, it's pretty wide open. And then you've got Vegas who are 14th. So I definitely agree it's wide open. Yeah, there was definitely some teams I was like, what are you doing? I loved what Florida did. I love the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, that's your team.
Everybody knows that who listens to the show. They're probably like, oh my God, she's so annoying. Why is she bringing up the Stars? I think Adam Henrique makes a lot of sense for the Oilers. I mean, the Leafs are a team where I was just like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they went out and, like, I struggle with this because I think they added an element to the blue line that they maybe haven't had in the postseason with like a Joel Edmondson. He's physical. He's a big guy. But I feel like when I look at the Leafs blue line, one of their problems is like moving the puck out of the zone. And I don't think they address that in a meaningful way. So, and then they add a depth guy. So I think the Leafs were another team where it was just like, eh. But I also don't think the Leafs are going to fix all their problems in the trade deadline either.
Yeah, it might be an off-season haul.
Yeah.
We're talking to Haley Salvin of Athletic CBC as well. Tonight, big game here on Sportsnet between Toronto and Montreal in the PWHL. Toronto, what the heck has happened to them? They've turned it around. They're going for their ninth straight win tonight against the league-leading and emotional heartstrings of Montreal. I wonder for you, are we seeing, you know, the two best teams in the league go head-to-head tonight? And, you know, you mentioned there's not really that many tiers of winners in the NHL, but in a league with only six teams, it feels like anything can happen any given night in the PWHL. But we're seeing, I think, the two best going at it tonight.
Yeah, I think so. And I think in terms of, like, the standings are, it might look pretty set, but with the 3-2-1 point system, I do think things can change pretty rapidly. And we saw that with Toronto. They went from being in the bottom of the league standings to second, and they have an opportunity to pass Montreal today with a regulation win. They could tie with 30 points for first. And I think in terms of like matchup and goal differential, Toronto would have the tiebreaker. So Toronto could, you know, there's a spot.
Big one.
There's a number one spot on the line here in this game. And yeah, the huge win streak on the line, like an 8-game win streak when you've only played 15 games.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Like that's unbelievable for Toronto. I think it'll be a great game. It's International Women's Day as well. The league's going to have the Molson jerseys today as well, where the Molson logo is on the top and the player nameplates on the bottom. You know, I think the media room got like, we got booted out of the media room at Mattamy. So I feel like there's going to just be like things going on. So I think there's going to be a lot of excitement and energy at the rink today. And I think Toronto's matched up pretty well against Montreal. I think you can look back to, you know, the last two games against Montreal for Toronto was like pretty important moments for this team to kind of get back on track after a pretty disastrous start to the season. That's probably extra. It was only a few games. But a slow start to the season, we could say. I think the shootout win where Kristen Campbell stopped like three Poulin attempts was a huge moment for her specifically, kind of getting her swagger back. And when Kristen Campbell's confident, as we've seen, she's been a wall for Toronto. She went from being sub 900 to around a 950 goalie, which has been unbelievable and a huge part for Toronto's turnaround. And then the Scotiabank Arena game was against Montreal as well. And that was a big moment of like, Toronto doesn't just need Natalie Spooner to score all the goals. They actually had depth getting involved. That game was Jesse Comper, Hannah Miller, and Victoria Bach getting on the score sheet. So it's another good, like, I don't want to call it a measuring stick. They're 1-2 in the league, but it's going to be a pretty big game between these two teams again with number one on the line. And I think it's probably too soon to start thinking of like, ooh, if they get the number one seed, they get to pick who they play in the playoffs. But I'm sure that's something that's top of mind too. I think, you know, regardless of the fun playoff rule, teams want to finish first, but that adds like a fun little layer.
It's going to be so much fun. Appreciate you helping us tee it up and break down the trade deadline, Haley. Happy International Women's Day. And I'll be at the game tonight. If you're going to be there, I'll look for you. But if not, we'll see each other soon. All right?
I feel like we always say that and then you ghost me. But we'll see.
I will show Haley my text messages to the world.
No
not
idea.
A chance, girl. Anyway, enjoy your night. We'll chat soon, Haley.
See ya.
Thanks so much. Haley Sullivan.
Oh,
the
man.
Athletic and
called
CBC.
Out.
I'll show it. I mean, I'm not a deal breaker in terms.
Are you
of
are you a ghoster?
No, never. I'm very only when it's like an Irish exit.
Right.
You know,
like yeah.
Sometimes you.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Haley did a great job at helping us tee up what's an important day here. It's International Women's Day, of course, and we're talking about Molson. We're talking about the PWHL tonight. Mm-hmm. The two best teams in the league go head to head in Toronto. It's Montreal and Toronto. Team one, team two. Big firepower, and Molson has done an incredible thing for today's International Women's Day. Special jerseys, which you'll see out on the ice tonight. I cannot wait to go check them out. And they let us have a sneak peek to show you all. And so I've played hockey for a very, very long time, and this has been, I guess, something that I didn't really think of until now seeing this debut of this brand new partnership. But Molson has decided to put their logo at the very top of the jersey. So they're the hair, the luscious locks that most of us women have won't be covered. Their name won't be covered, but Molson's logo will be covered. So they are covering their name so hers could be seen. And it's a really amazing partnership. Obviously, PWHL is coming off such a great, strong showing so far. And to have sponsorships like this, to have the jerseys for tonight, to help the women, you know, get more recognition, more name value out there has been incredible. So Molson, obviously the proud beer sponsor of the PWHL, covering their name so hers could be seen. I think it's just awesome. So I've got the Toronto jersey in front of me. This is Natalie Spooner's jersey. This thing could go for a fortune. You got Dubois over there. This is a big, big game between two awesome teams tonight. And the jerseys are really, really sweet.
Say,
and you can't have it, no.
can I just, and you can back me up on this because I've been saying this all day. This Montreal jersey is one of the nicest jerseys I've ever seen.
It's sweet. This is very sweet.
Every single league should have a team with these colors. It's beautiful.
Yeah, they're pretty nice. They're vintage, and I like a good vintage thing.
Stunning.
So this is for International Women's Day, of course. Tonight you can watch this game, Montreal and Toronto, tonight on Sportsnet. The two top teams, you got Marie-Philippe Poulin, you got Natalie Spooner. It's going to be awesome, and Molson will be debuting these International Women's Day jerseys featured tonight.
Are you sure I can't keep this?
No, I've already asked. It's for me. It's International Women's Day, and you're trying to steal my jersey? That's
well,
right.
I just think that you could get another one.
You probably could.
Yeah.
And just quickly on the PWHL, and Haley was mentioning it, some new rules, and I quickly wanted to get your thoughts on it. This is really exciting. The gold plan. Now, only six teams this season, obviously, with it being the inaugural year. The teams that are eliminated from the playoffs, only the top four make it. There'll be two teams. Instead of tanking, they have created this idea called the gold plan. Now, the gold plan has been floated around before, but what's going to happen is once these teams are eliminated, the final two teams, team fifth place and sixth place, will then duke it out. Whoever has the most amount of points until the end of the regular season will get first overall selection.
Right.
And this will be the second draft ever. The amount of talent at the NCAA is unbelievable. So instead of tanking for someone like a Sarah Filliar, you're going to play your butt off to try to win the opportunity to draft first. What are your thoughts on the gold plan?
I'm obsessed with it. I honestly could not love it anymore. And I think one of the great things about having a league that's in its infancy like this is you can try things and see how they work out. You almost have a blank canvas to try and drum up as much interest and excitement and try and figure out what's the best strategy to improve your league moving forward. And I think this is a step forward, not just for the PWHL, but if this works, you could end up seeing this everywhere. The NBA, the NHL, WNBA, like everywhere. And that's how monumental of a rule change I think this could potentially be. I think it's going to make for great rivalries. Like, who wants to be the team where the first place team says, we want to play you? Mm. Like, that's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But then it's also billboard material in the locker room to be like, hey, they chose us. Like, let's show them something here. And then the anti-tank measures, that's exactly what you want. You don't want teams who just mail it in for a quarter of the season because they know they're bad. Like, you're witnessing this with the Toronto Raptors right now, just losing, losing, losing. And it's not their fault. I don't really think they're tanking, but they're stacking up the losses, and that's beneficial to them. Yeah. And wouldn't it be great if it mattered more in terms of wins, if they could be winning more, then it would be more helpful for their draft stock. So I think this is a brilliant move, both of them, mm-hmm. and I think it's a great thing. I'm very excited to see how it plays out.
And it's great for the fans to have more hockey to watch than 100%, is meaningful,
right? 100%.
Like if you know you can win the next two games to secure first place, like those fan bases that are already wanting to have more and more engagement are going to have the best opportunity to watch their teams continue for the last 3-4 games this season to keep trying. And I'm really excited to see how this goes out. New rules, more to come possibly. Mm-hmm. And so that's just been a wonderful debut for the PWHL. You'll see these jerseys once again tonight. Molson sponsoring the PWHL, the official beer sponsor. These are beautiful jerseys. They're covering their name so hers can be seen. So thank you for the jerseys. I'm hoping that we get to keep them. We will take a quick break, and we have lots more on the show. We're going to have Luke Gazdig join us in studio, and then we'll wrap things up with Frank Saravelli, who's going to join us to help us break down like what didn't happen. He's already tweeting things out that might have happened.
Sure.
And so, you know, there's a whole world where we can dream. But Luke Gazdik will give us a bit of a player's perspective on how crazy the trade deadline is. You're packing suitcases, you're losing teammates, you got new guys thrust in the room. Lots to go through. We got one more hour here on the Fan Pregame with Jesse and Ailish. All that's come.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 590 and Sportsnet 360. One more hour remaining. Jesse and Ailish here for you. We've had 2 hours of breakdown, the pre, the during, and now we're in the post period of the trade deadline. Thanks to our guests, Jennifer Botterill, Sam McKee, Luke Fox, and Haley Salvian. And with 1 hour left, we bring in Luke Gazdik, who has been running around the building
here
and there and everywhere. So we appreciate you jumping in. How's it going, Luke?
Great, guys. You know, I'm starting to get a little tired, I'd say. It's been a long day. But yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
What's more stressful, being a player waiting for a trade call or being an analyst that has to break down the trades all day long in and out of the studios?
Player. Yeah. Anything and everything involving being a player for me was stressful, whether it was trade-related or we were just talking about scrapping. Mm-hmm. Like, even playing the games for me was very nerve-wracking.
So this
stressful.
Is a breeze, then.
So this is honestly a breeze. I say that all the time when people ask me, they're like, what's more stressful, being an analyst or being a player? Like, it's a play. For me, it was a player, 1,000%. I'm just chilling on the panel when I'm doing
the
analyst
was today?
Work.
How was today? Because I know you spent a lot of time over in the players' lounge just sort of trading stories and stuff.
Yeah,
so
it was good. Like, we didn't really have to focus too much on breaking down trades mm-hmm. or have to be insiders and mm-hmm. talking about what was happening. We were just sharing stories, swapping memories and stuff like that. And we had some good ones. Like, Steger's up there. He's always good for a joke and all that.
The Cups line was fantastic.
The Cups line was great. Brad May was sitting across from me. He's great. And Carolyn was just putting up with us all day. So
someone's got to do it, eh?
Honestly, it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Well, we'll ask you a little bit trade-wise, just in terms of, you know, today chaotic, but we got some things at the buzzer there, buzzer beaters, like Vegas Golden Knights. We'll get into it. But do you have a favorite move of even today or, like, the trade week in general?
Ooh, good question. I know I probably should have came prepared with this.
Just go through the teams on your tie.
No, you know what? I really like what Colorado did. Mm-hmm. I know a couple were yesterday, but that was a team that I saw that was already a Stanley Cup contender. Mm-hmm. They go and add two meaty forwards, I guess you'd call them, a good puck-moving defenseman. Like, the Central Division now is a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I think Dallas added Tanev. Like, it's going to be tough getting out of there. I really do like what Edmonton did. Mm. I didn't think they had to tweak it a ton, and I thought they brought in two really good centers and a good defenseman. And then, obviously, I know you said we'll get to Vegas, but, mm-hmm. I mean, what are we doing here?
What do you think of that? So what do you think of that? Because, I mean, we just got the analyst version, but you're a player. Yeah. Like, what if you're playing for the Oilers and you hear Vegas sneaks in another guy?
I mean, I'd be pretty choked, to be honest. Mm. I think someone just said upstairs that with LTIR looking forward to the playoffs, it'll be $17 million over the cap, which is just, it's not a level playing field. anymore. And I think I would be fairly choked. It's tough to be mad because they're not breaking any rules,
right,
technically.
Right.
They have a really savvy management group there that is finding loopholes. And if you want to call it circumventing or whatever you want to call it, they're figuring out a way to get through this. But, you know, Jason Buchla made a good point upstairs too. He's like, people are still picking up the phone. Like, people are still answering phones and making trades with them and retaining salary on their deals. Like, no one's giving them a hard time. Everyone's just making it almost easier for them. So as a player, I think I would be a little upset, especially, like, let's say you're on the Oilers and you're right up against the cap. Like, you got to be a little choked, but, I mean, that's the way it is right now. Hopefully they change it, but we'll see.
That's such a good point, because you look at the standings and you're like, for the first time, if you're Vancouver or Edmonton or, you know, eventually potentially Winnipeg in the postseason, you look at the standings, you're like, ah, maybe this is the year where we won't have to worry about Vegas. And you go out and you do your business and you're thinking, okay, we made ourselves marginally better. The Canucks did something, the Oilers did something, and even the Flames did stuff, and they're chasing Vegas. And then Vegas basically at the buzzer goes out and does this. It's like, it's like you said, they're not breaking any rules, but at some point, do you think the league needs to look at the way this is happening and the impact and what it, like, just what it looks like to the fans? Cause like it's enough of Vegas. The Vegas is the only team that's pulling this off, and you can blame the other 31 general managers for that. But at some point, like, the fans also, I think, are sick of seeing the same team load up at the trade deadline every single year. And especially Canadian fans.
Exactly. And I think there's a couple factors that go into it. And you mentioned Calgary. Like, I just didn't love that Craig Conroy traded Hanifin within the division and to the team that they are chasing. I talked about this on Hockey Central yesterday, but the third party retention, like Philly stepping in at the last minute to take 25% of that trade, like, that really just doesn't make sense to me. Like, why are you pooling salary to help another team? It's just something I still don't fully understand. I was just talking with Chris Versteeg up there, and he does a bit with the PA, and they're already trying to figure this thing out. And one thing that he did mention is stuff like getting, I don't want to say necessarily bonuses, but having players that you draft and develop only counting for, let's say, 25%. So like a Mitch Marner here in Toronto, his $11 million or whatever it is, his full salary wouldn't count against the cap because he was drafted and developed here. So stuff like that should be brought in, rather than just going and straight making the playoff roster cap compliant right away. Like, that's tough, but I do think there needs to be a little tweaking, just because it clearly, well, it's working for them, but it's not working for the rest of the league.
Let's ask you about the Maple Leafs. So they added two defensemen and then Connor Dewar right at the final buzzer there.
Yeah.
But the biggest moves, are, I guess, are bulking up on the back end. I think higher expectations possibly for Leafs fans are just wanting to do a bit more. They do have some cap space, which they didn't use. So I wonder for you if it's enough, specifically when you look at the Bruins and the Florida Panthers, who are just getting better and are scary.
You know what? I didn't love it. Even going into the day, my first radio hit was with Ben and Brent at 8:30, and we were kind of talking about it to look at the start of the day, and I hadn't really loved what they did. But the more I thought about it and the more I looked around the league and saw what teams are doing, I don't mind it. They needed help on the back end. They needed to get a little tougher. You pick up a lefty and a righty in Labushkin and Edmondson. Connor Dewar is a feisty, gritty player that can help them down the middle. They need help on their penalty kill. He can do that. They didn't get worse, put it that way. Like, the Maple Leafs got better. I don't want to say it's substantially or significantly better, but they got better. And I think with especially Canadian markets, like, I was in Edmonton for 3 years. You always want your GM to take the big swings. And you asked what I love, like Winnipeg going out and get Tyler Toffoli. Like, that's, I think, what fans want. They want the big sexy name and the big ad, but sometimes just a couple small ads and tweaks will do the job. And overall, I don't mind what Toronto did.
As a player, when your general manager, you said every player wants your GM to take a big swing, but if the situation with the Leafs, they didn't end up taking a big swing, is there any message sending to the room? I know that that's obviously not the intention, because they got a little bit better, but do you run the risk when you're in a position like the Leafs are with the core that they have and you're trying to get over the hump? Is there a risk that the players sort of look at what the GM wasn't able to do with the trade deadline and say, maybe leadership doesn't believe in us as much as we thought?
Look at other teams in your division. Mm-hmm. Like, why are they getting better and we're not?
Yeah, I think you can look at that. I always kind of try, even when I did play, you got to kind of try to look at the glass half full.
Right.
Like, they, tr- like they trust us. This is the group that they want to go forward
with. Yeah,
that's
a good attitude.
And I think that a lot of the time, too, bringing in a big name, I know it didn't happen with Toffoli, but bringing in a big name can also involve big names on your team and big parts of your team going the other way that are already big parts of your team.
Or now, losing ice time, too.
Exactly. Yeah. And then guys get bumped down, and then there's some internal competition, which can be a good thing. But I just also think that there's probably a conversation that was to be had where Brad walks in and says, listen, this is our group. Like, this is on you. I love this core. I love this team, and I don't really want to mess with it. There wasn't anything out there that that I thought we could achieve and not hurt this group too much. And I think that says a lot. Like, if I'm a player and I see what happened today, I'm like, all right, well, it's on us, boys. Like,
yeah, buckle up.
It's time to go.
Bride Trey Living is speaking to media right now, so once we're done with you, Luke, we can get some look around at what he had to say. But he will be addressing what they didn't do. So we'll get to that in a little bit for our listeners. Let's talk about your Oilers, though, your Oilers. But I know, you know, you have a little bit of an affinity for the Oilers. I think that they did pretty well. My big question is the goaltending still the Achilles heel, or do we have enough faith in that moving forward? Because they obviously didn't add one, and they're kind of hanging on by a thread.
Yeah, and I love Stuart Skinner, and I think Calvin Pickard's done a pretty good job having to step in when he's had to. We had a pretty big debate over this upstairs in the green room earlier. It was, I think, before we even went live, and
Who were the teams?
It was both Roy and Versteeg were saying that they were shocked that Kenny Holland hadn't gone out and acquired at least a solid backup goaltender like a Jake Allen.
Mm.
And I didn't exactly agree with that. I really think Stu's the guy. Stu is the guy that the Oilers drafted, developed. Edmonton, born and raised. I love storylines in hockey. I'm a sucker for them. And yeah, he fatigues a little bit, and I think a lot of people still, even after this much time, have a sour taste in their mouth from the playoff series versus Vegas last year, him getting pulled 3 out of the 5 games or whatever it was that he started. But I think he's the guy, and it's putting all your kind of eggs in one basket with him is maybe a dangerous thought, but I don't mind it. Mm-hmm. I don't mind it. He's been there for them for a large part of this year, and he's just a big part, and I think, you know, at some point you got to pass the reins to him and just let him see what he can do. So as long as he can stay healthy and make some saves, that's a good looking hockey team.
Yeah. I also feel like goaltending is perhaps the most fickle it's maybe ever been. Like, you just need a goalie to get hot at the right time. Like, 100%. There were conversations about, you know, in this market, the Toronto Maple Leafs supplementing their goaltending. They've had times this year where it's been a different guy at different chunks of the year. So you just sort of have to get lucky. Like, oftentimes now, it's just whoever can get the hottest in the playoffs is the best. You look at the Vegas Golden Knights last year. It was Aiden Hill who just stepped in and went on a crazy run. So I think, to your point, Stuart Skinner definitely has it in him to try and lead them to the promised land. I wanted to get your take on teams that maybe didn't do enough, or not necessarily adding, but also giving players away, like kickstarting rebuilds. And I know you had a specific team in mind that you felt maybe, why are you standing pat when you're trying to kickstart a rebuild? And I'll let you expand on it.
Yeah, anytime I could take a shot at Ottawa, I tend to.
There you go.
It always goes over well with the Toronto audience. I always tell this story. I did a Hockey Central thing earlier in the season where I went after Tim Stutz a little bit, and I had to shut down my Twitter for like three days after because Sens Nation came at me in full force.
They can be feisty.
The rest of the league goes after Stutzla too. Like, you're not alone in that.
Ottawa was the one that, and I'm not throwing anybody under the bus upstairs, but we said the same thing. The deadline hit, and we all kind of looked at each other, and we were like, what's Ottawa thinking here? They moved Tarasenko yesterday for a pick, retained some money, but nothing else happens. I know Chychrun's name was out there, and I understand this is probably just some decisions that they're going to wait till the summer to make, but Steve Staios has talked about changing the culture and about getting stability in there, and I'm not really sure what the long-term plan is there. I feel like they could have kickstarted that a little bit at this deadline, and nothing happened at all. So I'm just kind of interested to see where... I mean, he's a smart guy. I know Steve, he's going to take good care of that team. I'd love to kind of get a sense of what the long-term plan is there in Ottawa, because I'm not really sure.
Somebody that did move today was Pat Maroon to Boston, and you were with the Oilers when they got Pat Maroon. Adding a guy like that who clearly just wins cups everywhere, so that's part of the situation. What's it like when you add a new guy to a room? I wonder if there is any adjustment period when they come in as a veteran, if that's just so easy, and the trade deadline in general. But him being added to the Bruins, just another guy that's going to help that team as well.
So me and Patty used to absolutely battle. Like every game, like with Anaheim, it was just a chirp match. And like he played on the fourth line and so did I. We would just go at it. And we actually fought and had like a really good tilt probably 2 weeks before the deadline. And then deadline, I see it shows up, Pat Maroon traded the Oilers. I'm like, oh, God.
Here we go.
So like the second he walks in the door, first you have to get like, you know, the pleasantries out of the way. Hey, man, you know, we're all good, all this, all that. And so once we got that out of the way, it was great. Patty is smile on his face all the time. Same kind of like Versteeg, where it's kind of no filter. What you see is what you get. He says whatever comes through his mind. Loves getting the team together away from the rink. And I just love what he brought. He was exactly what we needed at that point in Edmonton. Was just a little bit of change of culture, I want to say, and a little bit more positive vibes. He's going to help Boston a lot.
Right.
They don't play particularly fast, I want to say, which isn't his A game either, but toughness and a winning attitude and culture is what is what Boston's all about. So he definitely helps them. I know that's not what Toronto
wants
to hear.
They're just such an interesting team, right? Because you go through their roster, like they're not what they used to be, but they came out of the gate this year looking spectacular once again. And they had a little bit of a dry spell. And then anytime they go up against the Toronto Maple Leafs, they're a wagon again. But when you look at the division, it's so confusing because the Leafs probably have the edge when it comes to top end talent.
Yeah.
I know Pastrnak's a pretty good player, but him and Marchand are a little bit alone on an island there. Then you look at the Panthers, top to bottom, they're probably the best team. But what are some of the factors that you look at when it comes to a postseason series? And how much do you read into when the Leafs play the Bruins last night and they lose again, second time in a week? Are you able to ascertain anything from watching that game or the two games this week? Can you learn anything ahead of what they'll probably end up playing, the Bruins or the Panthers, the Leafs? Well, did you learn anything from those two games?
More so just that it's going to be really tough. It's going to be a tough series. And people continually ask me how Boston's doing what they're doing. And my number one answer is they have two starting goaltenders.
Right.
And they don't need both of them to be hot at the same time. It's like Swayman gets hot and then they slide Allmark in there and vice versa.
Why was Allmark's name out there as much as he was today? Because that's such a positive for them. Like, why would they want to detract from that?
We heard that they had a deal in place with LA, but it fell through at the last minute, which would have made LA very, very dangerous in the West. But they have two capable goaltenders. This is kind of one of my things that I've said as a transition from a player to an analyst was like, I don't know if people understand, or I hope they do understand how much good goaltending motivates your team and gives you confidence. Like,
that's a great point.
Playing in front of a goaltender, when you're sitting around in the locker room and you look over and you know your starting goalie's probably only going to give up 2-3 goals. Like, if he has a sub-3 GAA, like, you know it's probably a 2-goal game. You need to score 3 goals to win every game. Like, that is, like, there's not a better feeling. And, like, you get into a game and he starts making saves and you're like, don't worry, boys, like, Sway has it. Like, let's just go do our thing. Like, it's so much easier to play. Like, I don't want to take too many shots at the amount of goaltenders we had in Edmonton, but it was like every night we'd throw a goalie out there and it was 3 goals on 5 shots. And we're like, what are we doing here? You know, like,
impossible to win that way.
Play from 2-0, 3-0 down every game. It's a nightmare. So I think that gives them a huge boost. And this is such a cliche thing to say, but they play the right way. And when I say right way, it's like they're always on the defensive side of the puck. They don't make a ton of huge mistakes. Mm-hmm. They don't give you a lot of grade A scoring chances. They're just a tough, tough team to play against. And they have enough skill that they can score when you make mistakes. So it's going to be a tough series. Like, that would be a 7-gamer. I think it would take 7 to beat them. And they don't give you a lot.
The solidifying a goaltender can be, I think, is such an excellent point. And I think last night proved it. And the game's 3-1 last night, I think, is when they scored the shot from the point on Joseph Woll, a goal that can't go in. That was the backbreaker for the night. The game was pretty much over at that point. And then on the flip side, in the first game between the Leafs and the Bruins, I thought early on Swayman was amazing in that game. He made a couple, like I'd say three or four huge saves that kept the Leafs off the board. And I think that swung the game. So I just think it's such an excellent point you make about goaltending. And yes, it can be a very fickle position. And it's, again, I said earlier, it has to sort of be who's hot. But when you have proven commodities, that really helps.
Yeah, but and even last night's game, like I understand breakaways, they're not exactly a 50-50 thing, but Nylander turns over that puck, one of the most egregious turnovers I've seen in a while.
Long time, yeah.
Like Joe's got to make that save on a breakaway.
Yeah.
Like your goalie has
on the ice
your goaltender, and that's it's Trent Frederick. We're not talking about you know, I don't know, Kucherov here or something. Like you got to make that save, and it's just big goalies make big saves at big times in games, and like right there, it's just like
deflating.
We just get one there, you know, and then you kind of sink a little bit, and before you know it, the 4-1 goes in, and you're just it's mindset over.
Yeah.
Leafs still got to figure out who their number one is, but they got a little bit of time Saturday night. They got Samsonov and net against the Habs, which hopefully should give them a little bit of steadiness. Luke, we appreciate your time. I know you've had a long
day. Awesome.
So you go back for your last hit, and then you get some rest. Appreciate everything, congrats on a good day. Luke Gazdick, of course, of Sportsnet, giving us a little bit of a player perspective as we look at today's trade deadline. We're going to have one more guest after the break, and it will be Frank Saravelli. He will help us work through what didn't happen today. We have still some things trickling through also, so we'll take a quick break. We'll take a look at Frank's winners and losers and everything that was on trade deadline day. It's the Fan Pregame. We'll be back in a minute.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame. Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, about an hour and a bit past the trade deadline. Most things are solidified. No more trickling through, but Brad Trey Living is talking to the media for the Maple Leafs here. We're going to pull up some quotes. Luke Fox obviously sending us some insight, but saying that Matthew Knies is doing very well. He should play Saturday in Montreal, which is good because he got bullied.
Rocked.
Yeah, rocked by Brad Marchand.
It's probably on purpose. No.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. Connor Dewar, a new addition for the Maple Leafs. Brad J. Living saying, quote, he's a guy who is defensively sound. He's a very competitive player. And hopefully he can help us on the penalty kill, which they do
it's
need
the most
help
GM
for.
Speak of all time.
Very much. I tried to put that voice on, too. also talked about Easton Cowan and said there was no thought to include him in any bigger trades. Quote, Easton's had a heck of a year, and he's a heck of a player.
Yeah, I mean, and you kind of got that sense going in that he was kind of
elite.
Untouchable and elite and a prize prospect of which they don't have very many. And there just it doesn't feel like there was anyone out there that would warrant trading him. So what's really the point?
There so, Maple Leafs done. They do acquire Edmondson, Labushkin, Dewar, and Cade Weber, who's still in university. So that's kind of their haul. Graded as you'd like. Actually, you know, we have our text line open always at 590-590. You can send us a tweet, Jesse and Ailish here. Like maybe if you're listening, you're a Leafs
very
fan. You're a
deadline.
Fan. Yeah, you're a fan of anyone. Who's winning? Who's losing? What do you grade in the Maple Leafs? You can send that in. We've got a little bit of time before the end of the show. You can give us our trade grades. And then Kipper and Bourne will be up on after us, of course. So they'll probably get into those things deeply. We're going to have Frank Saravelli in a few minutes. But I don't know. I just feel like today actually ended up impressing me more than I had anticipated.
Really?
Well, I mean, maybe just Vegas at the buzzer there. Like, I think that the thing I'm most impressed with is, like, there are some big, bad beast teams now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Vegas, Florida, Boston got scarier. We didn't even get really into Carolina getting Gensel and Kuznetsov.
That's so good.
There were some big names moved. Winnipeg getting Toffoli. I'm feeling good about some of the Canadian teams. Vancouver already looking great. Oilers getting better.
This is setting up to be an iconic postseason.
I'm hoping so. And, you know, even like the Avs and the Stars, like there are some really impressive hockey teams. Then there's like the mid teams. And we'll have to figure out which direction those guys are going. But we got Frank Saravelli on the line, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, did you have a fun day today? How's it going?
Look, I think every year fans are like, oh, there's no one left. What could possibly happen today? The deadline sucks. And then all of a sudden, every year, without fail, sometime in the 2 o'clock hour, our brains explode and we get a trade like we did today. Tomas Hertl going from San Jose to Vegas. And Yeah, it's a reminder why you got to watch.
Okay, that one obviously exploded our brains as well. So walk us through the shock, I guess, the return, everything that Vegas does to continue to do this year and year again, and where we're at now.
Every part of it is massive, and it's the whole thing. I got to tell you, you know me, I'm scouring every day for people to add to my trade targets board. Not one time at any point over the last 3 months had anyone mentioned the name Tomáš Hertl.
Wow.
He's injured, for one. Two, everyone just assumed that that contract, with the Sharks having one retained salary transaction slot left, that takes him to age 36 on his deal, that most people would be scared away from that contract. And Vegas says, oh, whatever, we're good. We're going to trade yet two more first-round picks. And the package that they paid was a massive, massive price. Mm-hmm. So I read into it a few things. One, that Vegas obviously does not care about what the future looks like. I truly believe this, and I say this with all due reverence. The Vegas Golden Knights would run over their own moms to win another Stanley Cup. And that just seems to be the
truth. On International Women's Day, Frank, come on.
Hey, look,
not the moms.
I'm telling you, they will stop at nothing.
Come on.
So that's sort of what the thought process is in terms of where Vegas and how aggressive they are. But the other part of it is, I wonder if this gives us any insight into what we could possibly expect or not from Mark Stone in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Is Vegas concerned that Stone may not be able to participate with that lacerated spleen?
So I'm assuming they fully expect Hertl to be healthy for at least probably the playoffs, but maybe even the end of the regular season. Like he's scheduled
Jesse,
to come back.
He's supposed to come back during this regular season.
Yeah, okay. So how long can they continue this before like anyone steps in? I know they're not breaking any rules, but just from a public fan opinion, the takes are firing left, right, and center on the socials. Like people of the 31 other teams in the league are upset that Vegas is able to do this. I don't know if the scorn should be directed towards the GMs that are not doing what Vegas has at their disposal and everybody else has at their disposal as well. Or they're looking at the league and saying, maybe we need to shore something up here. Is there any appetite to addressing this with the league as Vegas continues to do this every year?
Well, I'll tell you two things. One, last year, I think it was last year, I get my GM meetings confused, and it was shortly after. It's always in March, shortly after the deadline. Mm. But there was certainly a vocal minority of general managers that were sort of openly questioning the usage of LTIR in that general manager's meeting. And more or less, the Vegas Golden Knights were kind of called onto the carpet, and people were asking questions. How does this, not how does this work, but how is this possible? And I'll say the other part of it is there's nothing you can pin the Golden Knights down on.
Right.
I think maybe one, even when you look at their series against the Edmonton Oilers last year, people were crying foul about their use of LTIR space. But in that series, the lineups that they iced were all cap compliant, mm-hmm. even though there is no cap in the playoffs. So they're not actually bending or breaking any rules. And all of these injuries, to my knowledge, are all quite legitimate. Like I would be the first to sit here and report and tell everyone, hey, look, there's something funny going on here. But when it comes to Stone and the spleen and the legitimacy of the injury, it's unquestioned. And if they needed to put Alec Martinez on LTIR, which I don't think they did, but if they did, they could just slide an X-ray up on the screen and show the broken bone in his foot.
Right.
Like there's no funny business going on here or shenanigans whatsoever. And here's my thing. Like, if you're not taking it to the absolute limit and you're just, why even play? Why have $100 million payroll? Why put 20,000 fans in your building if you're just there to play nice?
That's showbiz, baby. Vegas. They can activate over $17 million of IR and LTIR once the regular season ends. So that's your perspective for listeners. I know everybody has all their different opinions. want to ask you about something that didn't happen, but seemed like it might have happened. Ullmark and the Kings, what do you know about this would have been a blockbuster deal and what maybe fell through?
Would it ever? I mean, that would have been humongous. And look, there was a reason why Ullmark was the second to last guy, number 49 on my trade targets board when we woke up this morning. This was floating out there in the ether for a bit. I do think that in the end, Ullmark had a large say in this process, and it was based on the no trade clause that he has. And I do believe that he ended up nixing this deal. And it would have been a game changer, I think, for the LA Kings, not just for this year, but also for the future in terms of stabilizing their net. Now, the more intriguing question is, and I don't know the answer to it, what was heading back the other way to Boston? And there's tons of speculation. I don't have it confirmed that Pierre-Luc Dubois might have been part of it. I tend to pour some cold water on that theory because he's another guy that has no trade protection and I can't see him approving, but hey, crazier things have happened. And this was a really odd deadline in general for the Kings. They clearly were they put machinations in place to clear out cap space. They ended up really doing nothing, which is a little bit surprising given that they were aggressive so number of weeks ago in firing Todd McClellan. Interesting deadline for the Kings and tons of questions about the Bruins and what they got up to.
What was the impetus to wanting to move Linus Ullmark? Like he won the Vezina last year. I know he's not having a great season and it's more Jeremy Swayman's net now. And he was great this week. We saw it firsthand against the Toronto Maple Leafs, but why would they want to move a goaltender? Wouldn't you feel more comfortable as an organization heading into the postseason, having two really high quality goalies, especially considering what we saw Vegas do a year ago in their postseason run, just have more than two goalies help you out during the course of the playoffs?
I am with you totally. Like when I look at this situation for the Bruins, I say the reason why they've had success this year in light of their offseason departures, the backbone of their team is this goaltending tandem. Mm. And by the way, I know you said he hasn't been great this year. He's got a 9-10 save percentage. There are general managers that would give limbs.
They'd run over their mothers.
Maybe.
High expectations.
I was going to not say that again. I was already a little too hot.
I love it.
So they would. Like, to get 9-10 goaltending in this league,
sure,
well above average. And that's just one part of your tandem. And Swayman has been elite. And Swayman needs an extension. And yes, there's, you know, certainly a question in the long term of how are we going to sort this out? But in the meantime, you've got two guys that absolutely love playing with each other, have been hugely successful, and you're trying to chase a Stanley Cup. Like, it's a two-goalie league. Some would argue it's a three-goalie league. Why would you want to disrupt what clearly works for you? But here's what the Bruins were faced with. They wanted to try and improve their roster, and they just didn't have the assets available to them to go out and find those pieces. And perhaps Ullmark was one of those options to do so.
Okay, so that's a trade that didn't happen. Is there a team that you just think truly didn't do enough to either make a stand that they're sellers, that they're buyers, that they're rebuilding, that we're just kind of mid?
Yeah, I kind of get a ton of those vibes from the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. And look, I think the idea to strengthen your team from a center ice position, excellent with Henrique and Carrick. I guess if Troy Stetcher does it for you on an insurance basis, sure. The questions I would ask to Ken Holland if I had an opportunity right now would be, one, why did you wait so long for Henrique? Because that same deal was on the table for you 6 weeks earlier. Two, you watched the Vegas Golden Knights, your likely first round opponent, just absolutely throw caution to the wind. And I wouldn't advise that necessarily, but if they're making all the moves, you can't then sit back and say, well, there's just nothing we could get up to. So I think that part certainly leaves Oilers fans wanting. And look, ultimately at the end of the day, the proof will be in the pudding, because we talk about how awesome trade deadline is. And it, from a hockey fan or hockey junkie perspective, it is amazing. Mm-hmm. But I do want to remind you that the last two Stanley Cup winners didn't trade their first round pick that year. And that was Vegas last year. They got Barbashev. And 2 years before that, it was Colorado getting Manson and Arturi Lehkonen. So, look, it's not always the big sexy splash that gets it done. And maybe that's all Edmonton needed. It's just when Van goes big and then they're in on every player. And, you know, you look at the Golden Knights and Colorado reshaped their team. Dallas got Tanev. Like, they were all seemingly bigger acquisitions than what Edmonton spent on.
When you evaluate trade deadline week as a whole, because I think that's sort of what it's turned into. It's no longer just one day where all the action happens. We saw a lot of teams making their moves earlier in the week. Who do you think comes out looking really good in this process throughout this week and moving forward here into the spring? Because it feels like we've been having this conversation all day. It's pretty wide open, and there were some teams that probably felt that way and made the moves to try and push themselves into the conversation.
It's a great question, Jesse, and I would say Colorado. I'd say for now and for the future, because they significantly upgraded their center position. They were in the market for that 2C, and they got that player in Casey Mittelstadt for the next 7 or 8 years, depending on what that next contract looks like. And they were able to move off of Ryan Johansson's deal, which was still on their cap for next year. And I thought it was an interesting choice to move off of Bowen Byram, because 2 years ago, he was playing at such an elite level when the Avs won the Cup, and he's only 22. But the idea that you were also able to bring in Sean Walker, not really, you know, there's a downgrade, but not hugely significant. But through all of those things that happened, you still kept your 2024 first round pick. You still kept Callum Ritchie, who's lighting it up in the OHL. Like, there's just so many facets to what Colorado did that it kind of felt like, to me, while everyone else was out here in silly season, they were making smart, calculated, you know, nuanced, detailed transactions that I think are going to serve that team really well now and for the future.
How would you grade what the Maple Leafs did? Obviously, they added a couple big defensemen, a university defenseman as well, which we'll see someday down the road, and then later buzzer beater with a centerman there. Do you think they played it too safe, or do you think Brad Treliving was just playing the market with what he had, what little he had to sell, what he had in the cupboards?
Yeah, he didn't really have much to spend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know this sounds funny to say for a Leafs perspective, but when you want to shop for Gucci and you've got a Walmart budget, like, it's really hard to pull that off.
Love
and
that.
That's really kind of the situation that they were in. They wanted to be aggressive. They were window shopping. They were looking at some of the big names that were there, and they could have, you know, pulled out their credit card and mortgaged a bit of the future and kicked some of those payments down the road and traded that first round pick. But in this case, I think what ended up being a thin market, they bought on the margins, and this team is going to have to show something again. The chips were down for a period of time this year. Morgan Riley suspended, defense thin. You know, you kind of get, you know, a little bit of a kick in the shins today with the Ducks claiming Lagesson on waivers, like one less body that you have in the door. And yet it's up to them now to make a response, to author one. And for a team that has, you know, shown very little in terms of playoff results, it's up to the core to answer that, the backbone that this team was built on. And yes, there's lots of facets of this team that leave you wanting, I think, especially on the back end. That all wasn't going to be solved in one shot. And I think Brad Treliving is a big believer that you do your business in the summer to improve your team. And that's when a lot of those needs will have to be addressed.
Yeah, I think the core probably failed the test this week, but still lots of runway left in the regular season and heading into the postseason. What's going on in Pittsburgh? Obviously, they make the move yesterday. Jake Guentzel out the door. I'm not sure Pens fans were all that impressed with the return. Maybe some people think it was better than the reputation that it's getting early on here. But Sidney Crosby was trending yesterday, and there were some whispers that potentially there was something cooking there. Was it ever a possibility that Sidney Crosby was going to be moved from the Pittsburgh Penguins? Was that ever something that was addressed? And where do the Penguins go from here? Gensel's out the door, but it doesn't look like they have it within the room at this current point to make a postseason run. So where are they, Frank?
Okay, so I'll address the Sidney Crosby fart first. Do you see this? 0% chance that Sidney Crosby was even on Kyle Dubas's mind in terms of moving. I believe that they've had some really constructive conversations going back months now on what the next contract for Sidney Crosby looks like in Pittsburgh. And I'd be surprised if we get through July 1st on free agent day, the first day that he's eligible, and he doesn't have a new deal to stay in the Steel City for likely the rest of his career.
Right.
So the ball is in his court. You don't go to Sidney Crosby and ask. He has to come to you, and I'd be sure, you know, I don't think that's ever going to happen. So he's been really consistent on that front. As far as where the Penguins are going from here, to me it felt like they had a real opportunity, again, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, whatever it might be, for a team that really showed no evidence that they can get back into the race, that they should have probably jump-started the Gensel situation and waited pretty long, especially while he was out. Once that happened, when Gensel went down with the injury a month ago, it should have been, hey, we're going to stop waiting to see what this team can do. We're going to start trying to maximize our return. And I do think that there was a shiver of panic that went up Kyle Dubas's spine at some point in the last 48 hours, saying, man, I better get this done and I better get a good return. The prospects and what they end up grading out to be is what will make this deal. There's some weird optics parts to it. Like, please don't call it a conditional first round pick. It's a second until it isn't. And the Canes need to win three rounds in order to make it a first. They tried to win the public relations war. They tried to win the, hey, look at us. We got all these different pieces and parts of it and layers. That's all great. But as far as I can tell, and the people that I trust as true talent evaluators, I don't think the Canes gave up their seventh, eighth, or ninth best prospects in order to make this deal happen. And not a hard first-round pick. It's a clear win for Carolina.
Is there any chance that come the offseason that Gensel looks at Penguins, and Sid called him friend when talking about Jake Gensel's time in Pittsburgh. Is there any chance that Gensel re-ups with the Penguins after he has this run with Carolina?
Okay, so I'm gonna go like 1%. I'll be nice. I'll be fair, and I'll say 1% chance. Mm. And here's why: it's not because of Sid, and I think the Penguins tried to play nice on the way out. But again, like, let's talk about how this season unfolded. Not at any point, not in September, not last week, not yesterday, did the Pittsburgh Penguins engage in any substantive discussion with Jake Gensel on what an extension might look like. And that really frustrated what has been a core key player for this team for the last eight seasons that helped deliver a second straight Stanley Cup. And I don't see any, never say never, but I'd give it a 99% chance that he doesn't end up back in Pittsburgh.
Okay. So you're saying there's a chance, though, 1%.
Yeah.
That means there's a chance. Yeah. Not a zero like Sidney Crosby, you know? Yeah. Well, Frank, I know you have a long day, long week, long life. So kick your feet up and enjoy a little bit of downtime before we get back into the swing of things. I think we set up for a pretty great push to the Stanley Cup with some of these teams bulking up. And then the offseason, of course, lots of questions remain.
There are going to be some really, really heartbroken teams in the Western Conference year. Six elite teams, and two of them guaranteed to lose in the first round.
Pretty tough. Can't wait to watch it all, though. Frank, we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Frank.
Enjoy some downtime this weekend, I hope.
See you guys.
Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. Lots to unpack there. Sidney Crosby stuff, I think people just get really excited about, but Frank's been pretty steadfast on it when we've talked to him about it on our show. Just like a no. It's not going to happen. Sid wants to be in Pittsburgh. He's loyal to it. And yeah, there were some frustrations. I'm sure there is. Like, this guy is a competitive guy. I'm sure he doesn't want that last memory to be his last time he ever played in a Stanley Cup playoff. But I don't know if he's the type of guy that walks and just leaves Pittsburgh's legacy. I think he really values playing for one team his entire career. But everybody has their limits, right? If this team just gets worse and worse and worse and worse, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the only reason why I even asked Frank that question about Sidney Crosby being potentially on the move, is because he strikes me, Sid, as the ultimate winner. And if you're an ultimate winner, you have to, I think, see a path back to relevancy. Like, for the first time in, what, almost 20 years, the Penguins are pretty much irrelevant. And that's, we talked about how that's sad and disappointing from an NHL fan perspective, but that's got to be frustrating to the nth degree for Crosby. Like, this is a guy who you see it in the way he plays and his personality. The guy clearly values winning. So you think that maybe there's a chance he reaches a point where he says, enough's enough and I'd like to leave. But based on what we heard from Frank, it sounds like Sid's going to end his career, start and end his career with the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is pretty cool also.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the standings as of late. Islanders, they're on the outside looking in a wild card spot, but they just won five straight. They didn't do anything today. Producer Mike mentioning Lamoriello's four straight years of the deadline trade. I was a little bit interested that the Flyers didn't do too much more, but I've talked about this with Frank and others on our show, is that I think they were just pretty happy that they're in this spot. It was a bit of a surprise for them to be already in a playoff position at this point of their rebuild, so they didn't do too much. Toronto left kind of looking around the Atlantic at a Florida team that got better, a Boston team that got better, a Rangers team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, the Leafs bulked up. They got bigger and taller and stronger on the back end. But I'm not sure if it's enough. And they're going to have a really big test internally to look around that room. And I think when we talked to Luke Gazdick, he put a great perspective in it, is you can see that as one way. Okay, the core four has sat around this room and looked at each other a lot. They've had a lot of those let's look within, but they're going to have that opportunity once again when it comes to, do we have enough this playoff round? And is it a vote of confidence that your GM didn't swing for the fences and grab one of these names that went off the board? You can view it that way. And I hope that they do, as in, well, we got to prove it. But we keep kind of having this same discussion after a trade deadline and after a playoff loss. So I'm wondering if it's starting to fall on deaf ears.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know I've been nauseatingly positive about the Toronto Maple Leafs today for 3 hours, but I if I'm looking at negatives this week alone, like, John Tavares after the Tuesday loss used the term, it's a learning lesson once again. And like, it's just enough.
They that. Got their doctorates.
It's enough with the learning of the lessons.
PhDs in learning.
Like, enough with that stuff. And then again, you come out two nights later and you lay an egg. Again, and especially when Sammy was in here, we were talking about Tavares kind of shying away from getting involved in the scrums. And it's like that attitude has to change. And we're seeing it change from the guys on the periphery. But until it changes in some regard with the core, whether it's the performance, whether it's getting involved in situations like that, that stuff has got to change if this team is going to go anywhere. So I think if we're nitpicking, that's the issue with this team that plagues them. It's not a talent thing. It really never has been a talent thing. Did they do enough? There remains to be seen, but it's going to have to come from within the room. And the response this week was not the greatest.
They've got a big test tomorrow. I know it's just the Montreal Canadiens at the Bell Center, but that is a game that means a lot to the Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. It'll be a fun one. That's Hockey Night in Canada set up for some great games tomorrow night. It's UFC 299 as well. Sportsnet got a big day tomorrow. Tonight, PWHL, Toronto versus Montreal, the two top teams in the league go head-to-head. That's up on Sportsnet a little later tonight at 7 p.m. Today was great, Jesse. Thanks for coming
so
in and
fun.
Filling in for Justin as he's drinking a mojito on a beach.
Yeah, it was fabulous. Great cast of guests and a wonderful co-host. So great job.
Thanks so much. We had a blast. Honestly, like, I didn't know what to expect. First one, like, real live, right in the heat of things. I was doing the morning show last year when you didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it was fun to cover the before, the during, and the after.
Yeah, maybe a little slower than we would have wanted, but I think for us, entertaining nonetheless.
And entertaining doesn't stop here. Kipper and Bourne will be on for the next 2 hours. You know they're going to come with some takes, with some analysis. And quickly, updated odds, Panthers and Golden Knights tied with the Oilers for the top three teams to win the Stanley Cup.
Oh, goodness.
Plus 700, all of them. So place your bets now. Things have changed because of the trade deadline, but I know where my money's going. Vegas.
Yeah, same.